For KOSU News, I'm Michael Cross, and it's time once again for This Week in Oklahoma Politics with Republican political consultant Neva Hill and ACLU Oklahoma Executive Director Ryan Kiesel. Education supporters from across the state descended on the state capitol Monday for the Brighter Future Rally, though in smaller numbers than last year. Estimates put the crowd at about 7,000 compared to more than 25,000 last year. Neva, you said last week you didn't expect a big turnout. Were you surprised?
Not surprised. I do think it was a significant number that allowed for their voice to be heard at the Capitol. I think organizers, frankly, they were projecting as many as 50,000 and had made all of the kind of the arrangements with the Department of Public Safety and others to be able to accommodate that crowd. So, I think Ryan and I both talked about the fact that we didn't have the intensity, and frankly, part of that was the superintendent races, the backdrop last time. But it did afford, this conversation, and I think it begins to put lawmakers in a position where they're going to have to really be educated on the issue, and then the teachers and people in education are going to have to get better versed in making their case because the dollars are clearly not there. And I think, when you look at K through 12 in Oklahoma, when only half of all of the employees in the school districts are teachers, the teachers need to, be talking to those folks back home and saying, what are we going to do about the budget to reallocate some of these dollars if we ever are going to get a raise?
Ryan, what did you think of the rally?
I think that it was one of those things where it helps to have a villain. And we talked about that last week. Last year, they had a villain in Janet Barisi. And this year, I don't think that there's any real consensus on who that villain is. In a moment, I think on another subject, I'm going to give a suggestion as to who that villain may be next year. We can talk about that. But I think a lot of the speakers, including Scott Inman, gave a great recap of what happened in the wake of last year's historic rally, and it was essentially legislators saying, "Don't let the crumbling Capitol building hit you on the butt on the way out," because they had their rally, but at the end of the day, there was still there's essentially fewer dollars appropriated for per pupil spending in classrooms, more students, fewer teachers, and then they still passed hundreds of millions of dollars in insane tax cuts. And I think that what it demonstrates is that our legislature is fluent in two different languages, money and votes. And the teachers came out of that rally last year and walked into the election cycle, and they didn't have the money and or the votes to really make a difference, make their impact known in the legislature. Part of that means that it's difficult for votes to matter whenever you have a lot of uncontested elections and whenever you have a lot of closed primaries where it's difficult to organize and really impact the outcome of a race.
I think the other thing, though, when we talk about the money aspect, we can argue this all day long, but in terms of how much is appropriated, when you have $2.4 billion out of the $7.1 billion budget going to Common Ed, there's a lot of dollars going into common education. Now, are they being allocated appropriately to get teachers what they deserve in terms of a pay raise? I think arguably everyone is saying no, but they have to do something because they're not going to continue to increase by hundreds of thousands of dollars and millions of dollars the appropriation, and they're going to have to do something else. And some of these ideas that are being tossed out there, like saying that teachers, let's give them a situation where they don't have to pay state income tax. I mean, some of those kind of things have a little sizzle, but those are going to be hard. They may be innovative and they may be been successful other places, but I'm not sure it's going to get a very a good hearing here in Oklahoma. But they're going to have to come up with something. And I think that's what's void here is solutions. The folks coming to the Capitol need to have some new ideas, and the people at the Capitol need to be embracing some new ideas. And that's what I still see being absent.
And we saw, OCPA had folks out there handing out these stickers, and you saw some of the teachers wearing those stickers that said, eliminate the income tax for teachers. Well, that's just nuts.
I agree.
Gets us in the exact same situation that we're in right now, where we're trying to patch holes without any money to do it with. I think I've seen fiscal impact statements that show that could cost up to $50 million in lost revenue for the state, and would it mean maybe a couple of hundred bucks in a teacher's pocket? That's totally the wrong way to go about this. The idea, though, is that coming to the Capitol with ideas, folks, including the teachers and the parents, are coming to the Capitol with ideas. They're saying, stop giving away hundreds of millions of dollars in unnecessary tax cuts and tax incentives and plug those into classrooms instead. And the legislators ignored them last year. They ignored them.
I think that's true. But what they were more interested in was the fewer number of mandatory tests. I mean, some of the things they are interested in and are up there talking about from the teacher side and from the educator side are things that are about them in their classrooms, in their schools. And that's where you've got this big divide. I mean, it's all about the dollars, but they've got a lot of different pieces in the equation that they've got to address. And I don't think they've found a good formula yet to bring everybody to the table to get that done.
Last week, the state Senate fast-tracked a House bill which would ban union dues for teachers' associations and send it to the governor. Now, we are recording this on Thursday, so we don't know if the governor will sign it or veto it yet. Ryan, it seems like lawmakers wanted to push this through quickly last week before the education rally on Monday.
Well, of course they did. You know, this is a real slap in the face to Oklahoma's teachers and the entire education community. Almost every year, whenever teachers go up there, including in historic rally years and other years, you know, legislators tell their folks, get involved in the process. Well, they did last year. They got involved in the process. They rallied. They went out on the campaign trail in the fall. And what did they get in return? They became targets for political retribution. And that's exactly what this legislation is. And whenever I talk about a new villain, I think their new villain, my suggestion would be Representative Tom Newell from Seminole. You know, here's someone who has put a target on the backs of teachers and said, I'm going to make it harder for you to advocate for the issues that you're experts on. And if the education community really wants to send a message in 2016, I think that they send Tom Newell packing. And you know, I think that would be a strong message. I also want to know where Tom Newell's at on organizations like the District Attorney's Council, where we actually subsidize with our tax dollars lobbying efforts at the state capitol, which is completely different than what's going on with the teachers union, where they're using their money to organize their organizations. So if Representative Newell wants to be consistent, I expect legislation next year going after the district attorney's councils and other organizations that use tax dollars for lobbying purposes.
Even there were some Republicans who had come up and said, this is just a bad bill.
That's right. I mean, it was definitely very divided. I mean, you had a divided vote in the House and the Senate. I think when you look at this, I mean, what you're looking at in particular is an organization, the Oklahoma Education Association, which is the largest public employee union in the state, no question with membership declining, and yet still trying to hold on to some political clout in the state, which has been diminished. I think anyone could argue very significantly in recent years, and it's partisan politics. This is a case where Republicans are in control. Republicans had an opportunity to address this situation and basically take government out of collecting the union dues for these school districts and state government, and they did it. And the track record back and forth is the OEA has been involved in recent elections with very high-profile legislators, Jason Nelson in the last election cycle being one of them, mm-hmm. where they said this was the most significant, important election, you know, that they could be involved in, and they went to the mat trying to take out that incumbent and were unsuccessful. And there are a number of other cases where they've either had gone to court or done other things to be involved in the process. So it's the old game of it's a give and take, and right now they're on the short end of the stick.
The American Federation of Teachers has promised a lawsuit if Governor Fallon does sign this. Do they have a case, Ryan?
I think that remains to be seen. I'd be interested to see what their legal theory is. I mean, I think that, you know, certainly under the Oklahoma Constitution's prohibition on special laws, that, you know, there may be a strong case there. But the case of before the court of public opinion, I think, is even stronger. What the legislators here are banking on is that teachers and are too lazy to go out and set up auto draft and continue to do this on their own and fund their organization, and that they're hoping to neutralize a very powerful political opponent. And I don't think that's going to happen the way that it happened with trial lawyers and work comp lawyers over the last several years in Oklahoma. When tort reform was a lot less about controlling an out-of-control civil justice system, because it just wasn't out of control. more than it was about neutralizing a political opponent in the trial lawyers' lobby. Yeah. They were successful in that. I don't think that that's going to play out the same way here.
I think the other element to this is the OEA has the unfortunate problem in Oklahoma politics right now in that they are so attached to the NEA, and what their national agenda is totally counter to what Oklahomans, including I think many of these dues-paying members of the OEA, would subscribe to. I mean, they are very aggressively against Second Amendment rights and many of the gun issues. They have been out there very supportive of abortion without limitations and advocated in many instances on multiple fronts on that issue. So those are issues that we know are litmus test issues in Oklahoma politics for anyone running for office or trying to stay in office. And I think that is one of those things that makes it very difficult for these folks at the local level, just like we see with the Democrat Party in Oklahoma versus what they have to be tied to and deal with nationally on some of these same types of issues.
Governor Fallon did sign a bill requiring physicians to check on an online database to cut down on prescription drug abuse. While the bill got bipartisan support in the House and Senate, all but one of the 40 votes in both chambers came from Republicans. Neva, do you know why the prominent conservatives opposed this bill?
Well, I think there were some concerns. I think privacy issues were probably at the forefront of all of the major concerns. But I think, as we've talked about before, it's the first bill the governor signed this session, and I think it is one that took a long time coming. I mean, we know that it started last session. They had a lot of problems to work through. They basically brought everyone to the table, and I think when you have a bill like this one where everyone finally, all of the major groups and entities and individuals got on board, but no one was really thoroughly happy with it, you know you've hammered out about the best resolution possible on something that that did need some resolution. So, I mean, I applaud the governor for signing it, and I think it's a bill that was necessary, and certainly all of the statistics point to the fact that that this will at least move us in the direction of being able to address some of this abuse with the prescription drugs.
Ryan.
I think it was a feel-good bill. We can't address a problem with demand by cutting off supply. And that's what this is doing. And I think that if you look at the other states where they've really cracked down on prescription drug abuse, and I don't deny that that is an enormous problem in the state of Oklahoma as it is around the country, but it's really about individuals that have addiction issues, and they're going to find their drugs, whether it's through a doctor, where they're supervised, and potentially at some point, when we're talking about harm reduction rather than just completely eliminating drug use, which is just a silly proposition. But in those states where they have cracked down on it, heroin use has gone up. So we're playing whack-a-mole. We come down really hard on prescription drugs, and heroin use increases on the streets. So that's, if we're really serious about cracking down on prescription drug abuse and reducing harm across the board with drug use, we got to have a grown-up conversation, and it can't be this conversation where, in the back of everyone's mind, the goal we're trying to reach is a 0% use of drugs across the board, because that's just not happening.
I would agree with that, but when you look at the statistic, and I think the governor even pointed it out during the bill signing, that there are more fatal overdoses in Oklahoma off of prescription drugs than alcohol and all illegal drugs combined, and then you add to that the statistic that they continue to point out about that that there were more overdose deaths than fatal car accidents. I mean, it is a significant problem. So I think the physicians, I mean, all of the give and take on how they got to a process that everyone found somewhat palatable, I think you have to have a place where at least doctor shopping has to be curtailed. It's not going to eliminate the problem. It's not going to eliminate, we all know that there are going to be plenty of avenues and outlets there for these folks to get drugs if they're looking for them, but there has to be some process to where at least we rein it in when we're talking about physicians.
But if we on overdoses, and the overdose death number is incredibly high, the way we combat that is by training first responders, and we're doing this right now through the Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse. We're getting better at it, training first responders, pharmacists, doctors, and loved ones of people that have addiction to use drugs to counteract overdose symptoms. That's part of this harm reduction, realizing the reality that we live in, and then operating within that reality. If we crack down on prescription drugs, we might see a reduction in overdose deaths with physician prescribed drugs, but we're going to see an increase in overdose deaths with heroin.
Oklahoma emergency officials have to come up with new plans to submit to FEMA. The federal agency is telling states they need to come up with hazard mitigation plans dealing with climate change or risk losing grant money, which goes toward emergency preparedness. Ryan, what do you think about this?
I think it just makes common sense. And it's really to, it's an effort to say if the federal government is going to invest in a state getting prepared, and keep in mind, this does not impact the dollars that we get in response to a disaster. So if tornado comes through Oklahoma, you know, this has, you know, no bearing on the federal government's ability to help us recover from that. What this is saying, when you're preparing, the state of Oklahoma needs to prepare for increased droughts, increased floods as a result of those droughts, when we finally do get rain, stronger, more intense storms over the coming years as a result of climate change. And we can't let people that put their political heads in the sand and ignore the overwhelming scientific consensus that climate change is happening and continue to act as if our state's immune from it. If we're going to take these federal dollars, invest them in preparedness, they need to take into account science.
Neva.
Well, even though this change takes effect in 2016 for Oklahoma, on our five-year plan, we actually are not up for a new plan until 2019. So I think, I mean, we're going to see minimal change, at least initially. I think there's been a lot of conversation about these requirements. But the hazard mitigation funding in Oklahoma, I mean, you're talking $30 million or something annually that is coming into the state for this. So they clearly are going to, make every effort to follow whatever the new rules are that are imposed. I think that from a political standpoint, I mean, you've got governors, including Governor Fallon, who's expressed some doubt that climate change is really responsible for the state's drought or any of these other issues that we talk about that are climate change involved. But I think that the long and the short of it is it's something that's in the mix. It's something that'll be developed into future planning. I don't frankly think it's going to be that hot button a political conversation point anytime in the near future.
And well, and since we get to postpone it a little bit, it'll be a new administration that deals with it.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, and whether or not that's any kind of big enough of an interest that it gets much conversation before the next governor is in office, I think it's questionable.
There we go. And Ryan and Eva's comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the ACLU, KOSU, its staff, or management.